now that the issue of job creation has become such a mantra in an American public policy dialogue, suddenly there's new ways of people are looking at the benefits of infrastructure investment. And in this era of no tax, no fee, no spending, there are some exceptions. I would assume that you'd have a take on the opportunities that infrastructure investment presents that I'd be interested in hearing about.
Well, when we talk about infrastructure, what we're generally talking about is public goods. An example of a public good would be the interstate highway system. Most of the interstate highway system is free. You can drive on it without paying a toll. Yet it created enormous economic benefits for the United States over the last 60 years. And so infrastructure is critically important. Public goods are critically important. But in general, the private sector can't finance them.
Dialogue today about an infrastructure investment makes some believe that this could be one of the most far-reaching public policy decisions or strategies as it relates to significant increased quality employment, job training, employment, especially impacting in minority communities, poor communities, undereducated communities, where good jobs are created not only in the making of the infrastructure, but then in the maintaining and operating of the infrastructure.
Well, let's start by saying that the question of our nation's infrastructure is one of the most important questions about our country's economic future. We have a $2 trillion deficit in 20th century infrastructure, according to the American Society of Civil Engineers, which is roads and bridges and so forth that have been allowed to decay and not been kept up, maintained, or replaced sometimes when their useful life ends. And then we have another deficit that's growing rapidly in 21st century infrastructure, the public goods of the future that our international competitors are very rapidly building out. And this is everything from a smart electrical grid to high-speed rail to universal broadband access, at low-carbon energy production facilities, the stuff the future will be made of. Now, $4 trillion, the AFL-CIO thinks that infrastructure need in our country is close to the same size as our old-fashioned infrastructure deficit. This is an enormous amount of investment we need to make if we're going to be a competitive economy in the future. And if we make that investment, we will be in a position to be competitive in the long run internationally, and B, we will put a lot of people to work, which we desperately need to do as a country. We have an 11 million job hole in our economy because of the economic disaster that Wall Street caused. And we're not doing a very good job at filling that hole. And it's particularly bad in communities of color, where real unemployment rates are in double digits. And for youth, unemployment rates are really at catastrophic levels in much of our country, and again, particularly among communities of color. But there's no guaranteeing that that we will create good jobs in infrastructure unless we make it so, meaning that without labor standards and without the right to organize, infrastructure jobs can be essentially jobs without benefits, dead-end jobs and the like, that don't provide the sort of ladder to the middle class they should. So there's really two issues here when you talk about how do we get good jobs into communities that are desperate for them. And the first is making the decision to make the public investment. And then the second piece is making sure that those jobs actually are good jobs, where workers have rights and where people can build middle-class lives with those jobs.
This issue of job creation and this opportunity for job creation through infrastructure investment it isn't simply linear. It isn't like if we spend some money, we create good jobs and job training, right? I mean, there's a little more work to be done here, right?
The thing about infrastructure investment is that done right, being done on a sustainable basis that recognizes that what we're doing here is creating public goods, and done with respect for workers' rights so that we create real middle-class jobs. Infrastructure investment it's an investment that pays all kinds of dividends. It pays dividends in terms of the good jobs created immediately. It pays dividends in terms of the good jobs created in the supply chain, right? Helping to rebuild American manufacturing and creating the kind of essentially economies of scale in American manufacturing and design and the like, so that our economy rebuilds at multiple levels. And then it creates, like all well-designed infrastructure, it creates economic opportunities for all kinds of people to do things. Right? If you think about the great infrastructure achievements of America's past, the Transcontinental Railroad, the interstate highway system, the national electrical grid, the national telephone grid. You think about what was made possible by the existence of that investment, and you think about what could be in a country where we had the kind of high-speed rail network that China is building, where we had universal broadband access, where we had a smart electrical grid, where we had really taken on the issues of climate change and our dependence on foreign oil. You think about the kind of economy we could have, the kind of opportunity that would exist for more middle-class jobs. That's the real promise of infrastructure investment. Most infrastructure work requires relatively skilled labor. Not all infrastructure work requires relatively skilled labor, right? There's people with a variety of levels of skills, say, working on rebuilding a bridge, right? It's building high-speed rail networks generally involves more skilled workers. But the thing about that is that there's potentially career ladders and entry points for folks who start out with relatively few skills to come into this type of work through these large projects, through union training programs, and as a result of the work that they do and the training they receive on a large infrastructure project, at the end of that project, they've got the skills, right, that can carry them further on. We've seen that kind of development when you look at these. And it's what differentiates, say, large scale infrastructure work from some other things our country really needs. For example, energy efficient homes. Right? There's a career ladder involved in retrofitting a commercial building that doesn't exist when you retrofit a home. And these are really and you can go from there to other infrastructure examples and see how it's about more than just putting somebody to work for a period of time. It's about creating a piece of an investment that's important for our larger economy and society, but it's also about that person who gets a job on that project is much more likely to come out the other end, right, with a skill set that'll make them able to sustain a middle class way of life going forward than they would with certain other types construction related work.
Labor particularly really does need to, and I don't mean just labor organizations, but I mean people, working people, need to recognize this is their issue too, right?
Well, I think the labor movement has been focused on our nation's infrastructure deficit for some time now. And we've been focused on it in a couple of respects in terms of its implications for our failure to invest in infrastructure, that the implications of that for our broader economy and implications of that for our workforce and for our nation's future. When President Obama spoke in his State of the Union address about the need to reauthorize the highway bill and to create an infrastructure bank, this was what the labor movement had been urging the president to use his pulpit to advocate for. We see, as I said at the beginning of this conversation, we see the question of investing in our nation's infrastructure as just at the very center of the question of what kind of future we're going to have as a country. The president of the AFL-CIO, Rudomko, likes to say, that it's a real problem. How does he put it? He likes to say, a result of President Obama's Economic Recovery and Reconstruction Act, we have 500 or so miles of high-speed rail in the planning process someplace. And that's a big achievement compared to what we had before, which was essentially zero. The only problem is during the same period, the Chinese are in the process of not planning, but at least 5,000 miles of high-speed rail in a country that is roughly the same size as the United States. Which, by the way, has a lot to do with why China has emerged from the economic crisis of the last couple of years much more rapidly and robustly than the United States has. The real message there is about who's going to be in a position to compete globally in the future. And if you're in China, clearly they're building a future in which high-speed rail travel will link their nation in a way that it's never been before. And in the United States, we're going to be, literally stuck in traffic on this one. If we're not, again, if we don't get moving. And the labor movement understands this very clearly. And we're working very hard for this. But there's a real basic problem here that people got to get their arms around. We are not going to have the infrastructure we need unless we commit public financing to doing it. It just is not going to happen. And we're talking as though there's some other way to do it. And while we'd have that fantastical conversation, other people in other countries are making the public investments they need to make. And we sit around and pretend that there's some other way to do this. And in the end of the day, it doesn't really.
Is there anything you'd want to add about the benefits of, in fact, engaging more people in our country, especially people who are working people, who are union people, in participating a little bit more in the dialogue?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think working people understand this very clearly. I don't think working people are the problem. I think that the problem is too much of our nation's intellectual and political elite got used to the idea that what we were going to do in the United States is manufacture bad mortgage paper and sell it to each other, as opposed to doing the things that actually countries do when they prosper. And it's hard to get those folks refocused. I think working people understand infrastructure all too clearly.